The following programming is sponsored by Doreen Taylor Music, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
What's going on?
Hey, America, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene every week to help you find out what's happening in music, TV, movies, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love on Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. Get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com, and watch us every week on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash, available in every single major city in the U.S. And it's getting colder, or it's supposed to be getting colder, and we're getting into gobble gobble time. And I want to say hi to my great producer, Matt Mynarik. Happy Gobble Getting Close Day.
Happy Gobble Getting Close Day.
We're getting closer. I'm glad Halloween's behind us now.
Yes.
I don't like Halloween. I'm glad it's gone.
Okay.
And I hate it every year I get older, I dislike it more and more. I know I'm in the minority, but I just don't like it. I hate it. I'm like Bah Humbug, but for only Halloween.
Well, I know people that don't like certain things, but you really have a disdain for Halloween.
I do. It's just all of it. And this year, my neighbors were playing whatever they decided to do because it was really warm here on the East Coast. So it was like 80 degrees at night. So everybody was out. Every kid was out. And I'm one of those ones, turn off the lights, and I sit in the back room, you know, hiding with my little, you know, microwave dinner. But I am one of those people. And all I hear is boom, 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 the bass. Somebody wanted a display and they were playing music so loud, though. It was just so distracting. And really, my town was doing it to like 10 p.m. They allowed it. And I was like, this sucks. It is a work day. And I'm like, you know, I'm just one of those get off my lawn people. I'm turning really old. I'm not that old.
No, you're not.
I'm turning really old really
man.
Quick. I got to pay the bills, man. And I got to sleep. I got to get my beauty
day.
Sleep.
It's not even a day. It's like a couple hours.
No, that was long, though. You know how they do it? Like, you know, a lot of places, it's what, like 5 to maybe 7? I don't know. What's your town? How long are they allowed to do it?
I don't know. We just go out there.
Yeah, see, but in my town, 3 in the afternoon. I guess that's cute because they get the little ones that come out. That's all right. And all the way to 10 p.m.? I said, they don't get enough candy. Oh, no wonder my town's fat.
For all of October, right? Or are you just talking about one day?
One day.
Okay.
I know, Bah Humbug, but it annoys me because it disrupts my flow of things. I'm very, you know, regimented, and I don't like when things disrupt my order.
Were you researching for a show or something?
No,
you doing work?
I actually wasn't. I knew I couldn't because I knew the sound would affect whatever I was doing because my office is in the front where all the little kitties would be. And of course, I had to be in the dark. So I had to go in the back. So no, I was not researching. No.
Too much thought.
I know. And I had no candy for Halloween. So I can honestly say I had no sugar intake whatsoever. Maybe I'd be happier if I was eating the candy.
You'd be a little more hyper, maybe.
But I am happy we're getting closer to Gobble Day. Thanksgiving is coming. I'm starting to plan menus and you're starting to figure out what's going on. What do you do? Do you do the same thing every year? Or do you shake it up with different like menu items? Is it always turkey?
Never turkey.
Never turkey.
Turkey sucks.
I agree. See?
I hate turkey.
See, we finally agree. This is why we work together. I don't like turkey. I don't.
Me neither.
So what do you do?
Well, sometimes we'll get a ham.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll just something completely different. I think last year, the year before, we made Mexican food.
Mm.
We had like enchiladas or something.
I'm coming to your house. I like
stuff.
That. That's good.
Because, I mean, yeah, it's these days, it's not like it used to be where like everybody, like your parents and everything, everybody was just so close together that you.
Yeah.
So like my grandparents have passed and my mom lives far away. My dad passed. So it's just us. So we just do whatever we want. And
I
watch
love
football
it.
And then, you know, just hang out.
I think a lot of these holidays we're expected to do certain things. Like you see people on TV, all those shows, you must have the turkey, you must have the big family, you must do all. And when you don't have those things, you feel like, well, what's wrong with me? Like they do that with Christmas a lot. And a lot of people get depressed about like, well, I don't have the family or I don't have all that around me. So I think honestly, especially for Thanksgiving, because we're supposed to be blessed with what we do have, do what you want to do.
Yeah,
you
want to
have spaghetti, you want to have ravioli, you want to have Mexican. Go for it. It's your show. Do what you want to do. I believe that. That's
absolutely
me.
Yeah. Maybe if you are fortunate enough to still be able to do like traditional family dinners. Yeah.
Do it. It's your
thing.
And
do it the normal way. But
most of the time, do you remember when it was the family back in the day? It was always a fight. There was always something. It was never that, oh, everybody's playing the, you know, the violin and everyone's happy singing Kumbaya in the corner. No, there was always a fight. There was football on. People were arguing. People were, well, now it would be politics. But in the day, you know, who it was always more stress than it was worth. Your mom got up for like, you know, 2 a.m. to turn the turkey or baste the whatever they were doing for the turkey. She never slept. It was just a lot of work for one meal. So I always say, be thankful and don't work, you know, sit
back. Do whatever you want, yeah.
Yeah, order takeout, for God's sake. I mean, that's to be thankful for. I mean, that's my opinion. But I'm very non-traditional, as you see.
You're very grumpy, it seems. It's like, your holiday, I can't wait till we start talking about Christmas, what you're going to complain about there.
I like Christmas. I do. I got to say, that's like my big one. I do like Christmas. And but I probably have some stuff I could probably find.
Oh, probably. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll complain about it.
Well, listeners, stick around.
Why Santa's boots have to be so loud when he's on my roof?
Why does he have to eat so many milk and cookies when it's costing me money? The prices of groceries right now, I'm costing a lot of money on those cookies.
Yeah, Santa needs to quit eating my food.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you can't eat the cheaper stuff.
Rudolph's nose is like shining through my window.
It's keeping me up at night. Get off my lawn. Get off my roof.
You are. You're going to be the house that everybody, little kids walk by and point and say, that's that crazy lady right there.
Crazy cat lady. Because I also have three cats. So yeah, I'm in training. I don't know if I'm even in training anymore. I think I'm already there.
People will start rumors. Like if you look at her house too long, your eyes will burn out or something.
I'm the urban legend house where there's like things.
That's you.
Oh, that's what we're going to have to do. A whole show on all the urban legends
demented
about me.
Demented Doreen lives there.
That's going to catch on. Demented Doreen. I like it. You just screwed me, though, man, because that's going to catch on now.
Well, you got to flip it then. You got to be the nice one.
Oh,
delightful Doreen.
Delightful. You're good with this today. You're quick. Look at you. I was trying to think of a D word, and I was like, delectable. I'm like, no, that sounds bad.
That sounds like food or something.
It isn't tasty. That sounds really bad. On that
That's
note,
your own business.
On that note, we have a very tasty show today. And on that note, how's that segue? Yeah, it's pretty good, right?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
I think we need to just close this chapter and talk more about this as the holidays are coming more and more upon us. But we have one of the greatest Christmas guests ever, I think.
Yeah.
We're starting off with a bang. I know it's early, but you can't say no to this. This is like, you know, Christmas legend right here.
Absolutely. Let's just get to it then.
My guest today on The Scene with Doreen was hailed by Rolling Stone magazine as one of the top 100 singers of all time. And the New York Times said her voice is as embedded in the history of rock and roll as Eric Clapton's guitar and Bob Dylan's lyrics. Grammy Award-winning Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Darlene Love is one of the most influential singers of our time. Not only has she been credited on singing backup for over 200 artists, she herself has lent her lead vocals on timeless hits like He's a Rebel, Today I Met the Boy I'm Gonna Marry, and of course, Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. Take a listen. Darlene Love continues to captivate audiences worldwide with her warm, gracious stage presence and superb performances. She truly is the voice of rock and roll and defined the sound of an era. A new documentary featuring Darlene just dropped on Netflix about Elvis Presley called Return of the King, The Rise and Fall of Elvis Presley. She'll be headlining the 6 ABC Duncan Thanksgiving Day Parade in Philadelphia. Yes, my neck of the woods, and she's kicking off her nationwide holiday tour in late November. As we begin to ramp up this holiday season, the official Christmas Queen is here to chat about all of it and more. Who doesn't love Darlene Love? So without further ado, let's bring in the Queen. Welcome to the show, Darlene. What's going on?
Thank you so much. I was just thinking about listening to Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. I can't thank that high no more.
Do you, when you sing it now, do you have to lower the key, or are you doing the original?
Yes, I've had to lower the key, and one of my big lower the keys was Paul Schaefer. He would always go, come on, Doc, can you do it again? I said, no, not right now, Paul. You got to lower that key.
I was going to say, at this point, if it's even in the key of Q, who cares? It's you singing it, baby. It doesn't matter anymore. It's your beautiful vocals. It's all good.
Yeah, it really is. I have a lot of fun singing that song. Who knew that almost 60 years later, that song would be at the top of the list at Christmas time?
It's unbelievable. And especially right now we're talking about it, and it's what? Top of the temperature. It's like 78, 80 degrees right now as we speak. That's kind of crazy too.
That's very crazy, especially in November.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times when they make Christmas songs, they're doing it like usually what, June, July? They're sweating.
Exactly. The hottest times of the year.
Yeah, you got to envision that you're like, you know, cold, wrapped up in like a scarf and by the chestnuts roasting on an open fire, and you're literally roasting in the sunshine.
Exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do want to go back a little because you've like you said, I mean, 60 plus years. It's unbelievable. Daughter of a minister, raised in a very religious family, but yet your father was extremely supportive of your musical gift.
Yes, he was. And thank God for that. You know, because back then when we were singing those songs, He's a Rebel and Not Too Young to Get Married and all of those songs, they were cute little, we called them bubblegum songs.
Mm-hmm.
Really what we called them. But that was actually the beginning of what rock and roll was going to start sounding like.
Yeah.
And that's the way everybody took it. It just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And my father understood the fact that I was going to be well chaperoned and there were going to be parents with us. The girls that I was singing with were at least 3 years older than me. So they were in high school or already in college. But my mother and father both knew their parents. And so I just had to check in when I got where I was going and check out when I was about to come home.
That's awesome. It got to be a lot harder to check in now. The cell phones didn't, you know, exist and email didn't exist. So how would you do a payphone? Like, how did you check in?
We had to find payphones.
Wow. For those in, you know, in radio and TV land, those were things that used to be where you put a quarter or a dime into the slot. Yes, a dime in the slot and talk to an operator. So those things existed, everyone. They actually existed. Yes.
Funny thing about that, you take that to a kid that's under 20 and they want to know what that is.
It's true. It's true. Right. It's like some artifact in a museum now. It should be probably at this point.
We had to find a way to do it. So it was either when we left the studios or whatever, they would let us use their phone and call in. But my parents were very strict about that. And the girls made sure. Did you call home? I said, yes, I called.
Oh, so good.
You got it done one way or another.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned sophomore in high school, you did join the all-girl group called The Blossoms, and
right.
you provided background vocals dozens of songs at the time. Yet The Blossoms didn't have a hit of their own. Well, looking back now, why do you think that happened?
You know what? The Blossoms was great, fortunately, a group already, and we had a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to change our sounds for different groups, different artists. I always say, think of Gene Autry. I mean, sing a Christmas song with Gene Autry. I mean, you had to have sort of a really one of those voices that would blend with Gene Autry,
right,
or Doris Day. So we had a lot of training from being in choirs and things like that. So, and it was easier for us to find a way to blend with all these different artists that were going on at the time.
Yeah. Now you have a big voice. I mean, you do. And when you think of, like, you know, blending, you're not a voice that I would think of. Plus, you know, you have a vibrato to it. So you had a straight tone probably at times. So you really had to learn. Who taught you all that? You just kind of learned in choir to straight tone and all that.
It's amazing that I used to do backup for Luther Vandross.
Mm.
He knew every voice that was there. And sometimes it was 10 of us or 5 of us or whatever. And he would call you out. He'd say, Darlene, cut out that vibrato. And I'm saying, what do you mean cut out the vibrato? It's normal. That's what I have. And he said, no, you don't have to do it. And Luther Vandross actually taught me how to sing without vibrato, which was amazing to me. It's almost something you have to practice because you have to practice holding your breath.
Yes.
And singing.
Yes.
That's how you do it, which was amazing to me because I didn't realize you could do that. But the thing about it, too, if you don't learn how to control your vibrato, you would end up doing it all the time for everybody. And it would get worse and worse.
It's true.
So I learned that, which is. And plus, like you said, I'm used to singing lead. So I had to learn also how to blend in with everybody else and not be ahead of everybody else, which is great training.
I was going to say the control that takes. People don't realize the less you sing and the straighter tone that you give, that takes more control than singing full out for a natural big voice. It's hard. It's a lot of breath control.
Very hard, but it will helps with that gut, honey.
Oh, yeah, the diaphragm. Oh, yes. It's very, you do, and you got to do that core. You got to have that strong core.
Yes, very.
Right out of the gate, 62, you meet the, I want to say infamous, Phil Spector. You were definitely his muse in the early years of your career, weren't you?
I was. I was singing during that time with the Blossoms, but Phil Spector had a partner, Lester Seale, and he was using us for other records and things. And Phil was looking for a group to sing He's a Rebel. The group in California, in New York, rather, was the Crystals, but they were too young at the time, and their parents wouldn't allow them to fly to Los Angeles. And that's where Phil Spector wanted to record. So we met him. He taught me the song. We went in the studio within a week or so and recorded He's a Rebel. And I knew at that time, you know, people say, how did you feel when that happened and your record came out and it wasn't yours? I said, well, at the time, we were doing a lot of records that weren't hits.
Just put
names on them. That, you know, if they thought it was a producer, thought it was going to be a hit, they would just put anybody's name on it and then stick the group together. And at the time, the Blossoms were a group, but we did it as a background session. I just happened to do the lead on it at the time. And I didn't think the record was going to be that big of a hit. Matter of fact, I was shocked when it went all the way up to number one within a month.
Yeah, it was number one.
That's what started it. That's what started it, that that's not the Crystals on that record.
Right. And, you know, they had to go perform it. They had to go on TV and start doing it. And it's got to be weird to hear them doing it. But, you know, it's you. Could you tell people? Did he like gag you to not tell people?
No, you know what? We never said anything about that. We did it. The only people that knew, the people in the studio, like the record producers, the guy who were playing all the instruments and everything. And everybody was just as surprised as I was that the record became a hit. And that's where they said, man, you know, you got a hit record. And I'm going, what? And they were coming back telling me, you know, that He's a Rebel was a big hit record. And we were all surprised. The biggest problem, I think, that the Crystals really had was they had to lip sync to that record.
Oh, I did not know that. They didn't try to. How could they? How could they recreate your vocals?
Not at the time. You know, like if a television show wanted you to do it back in the days and they were in the East, they would just make you. You did those shows where they did more lip syncing than live. You know, they had a little trouble when they started doing it live, you know, and in person. But, you know, it made them feel really kind of funny and strange that they were lip syncing to somebody else's record.
Yeah, I think so. Because the things I've learned over the years in the entertainment industry, credit is even more important sometimes than money. And especially to an artist who really is trying to have a, you know, form their career, it's hard to give up creative credit or even to pretend that you did something that you didn't do, like Milli Vanilli, for God's sake. So, you know, I mean, it had to be weird for both sides.
That was really unfortunate for them, too, because we had been doing that. You know, I don't think they ever thought that was going to happen.
Right.
And
right.
I think they made way so much about it. You know, when I was in, hey, He's a Rebel, Crystals, Blossoms.
You know,
it just worked out for me. Thank God.
Yes. I know that you had a fight, though, to get your credit with Phil Spector. I mean, it was, you even said it's kind of like a bad marriage at times with him. It's sort of, you had a love-hate thing with him. Now, did it start out that way? Did you know Phil was kind of, you know, when you met him? Or did that kind of devolve over time?
No, that devolved over time. Because when I first met him and we started singing, he hadn't had a hit record yet. And he was just growing. Phil was only like 20 years old when he had the hit with He's a Rebel. So nobody really knew who Phil Spector was at that time. And they knew who the Blossoms were in the industry, especially in California, because we had been doing so much background during that time. Yeah. But then when time came from, I said, well, he knows how to make hit records and he knows how to make them with me. We just have to put my name on them.
Yes, amen.
And, Yeah, then even with that, we recorded He's Sure the Boy I Love, and that was supposed to be my first record. And he decided to put it out under the name of the Crystals, he told me, because he had already had the hit with their name. So it's almost like it doesn't really matter whose name is on it. So, but the Crystals' name is on it, so therefore, that's what I'm going to do.
He had a very interesting way of navigating the industry. I mean, he had a lot of very interesting ideas, and a lot of what he did behind the scenes created the hits. I mean, it was like two people would record the song at the same time, but his, like a Ghost record, would come out a little bit more ahead. Or like with the Righteous Brothers, I know you know Bill Medley very well, and how he changed the time of You've Lost That Love and Feeling just to get it in there. And by the time the DJs knew that, like, why is my set running long? They figured it out, you know, that he changed the time to fit it in. I mean, that's where his brilliance, I mean, he was amazing at everything else, but that's where he really shined, was that kind of creative stuff.
You know, nobody thought about the time on a record, especially if the record was great as that record was. You know, it was over 3 minutes long, and our songs weren't but about a minute and a half.
They were fast. Yeah.
It was a big difference, but it was such a great record, they played them anyway.
Yeah, that's how you knew you had a hit, though, you know? And you were part of Spector's Wrecking Crew in the Wall of Sound. I mean, that had to be fascinating with the creative melting pot.
Yeah, it was because of all the musicians. We all knew one another, and we were all doing the same sessions for everybody else. Mm-hmm. It was the Wrecking Crew and the Blossoms. And if we needed more than three girls, which we were just three singers, we could always bring other girls, or even if he needed a guy in with us to sing, you know, the background. So it was fascinating to know we were having all these hit records under other names.
But, you know, at some point,
I was having.
You know, at some point, though, you did make the switch and your name started getting out there. And I want to like close that chapter where you were doing other things under other names. And let's just focus on you now. So I'm going to take a little break, but I'm chatting with the undisputed voice of rock and roll, Grammy Award winning and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Darlene Love. When we come back, we'll talk about Darlene's bold leap onto the silver screen and also the Broadway stage. Stay right there because we're going to be right back.
Choosing the right insurance company can be complex and confusing. At Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group, we don't just sell you an insurance policy, we sell you a lifetime of peace of mind, service, and satisfaction. A second-generation, family-owned and operated business in South Jersey, we're committed to protecting you and your family. With over 2,000 clients in the tri-state area, we are your local, trusted insurance experts specializing in business, life and health, and personal insurance. Contact Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group today to learn how we can get started on your insurance journey together. Visit www.log-insurance.com or call 856-627-2600.
Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene? Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com.
Hello, baby.
Hi, honey.
I want you to meet...
Daddy's new partner,
Martin. Martin Riggs.
Hi, how are you?
This is my wife, Trish. My new partner, Martin Riggs. Martin's going to join us for dinner.
Post okay with you?
What's for dinner? We'll see.
Darlene, welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I've been chatting with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Grammy Award-winning singer, but also Broadway actress and star on the silver screen, Darlene Love. You're not just a wonderfully talented musician. You've also made a very successful leap onto the screen as Trish Murdaugh in the four installments of the Lethal Weapon franchise, a huge franchise for Hollywood.
That was even more amazing. I think because I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, and then I ended up coming to New York by a very persistent young man named Stevie Van Zandt.
Oh, yes. We know him in Jersey, baby. That's where I'm a Jersey girl, so we know who he is.
And I came here. I told him, he said, if I get you a couple of gigs, will you come? And I said, yes. So where I came, actually, I was working at a club, The Bottom Line, in Manhattan. And the casting director of the Lethal Weapon movies was a fan. And after he heard me do one of my shows, he approached me at the end of the evening and asked me if I would do a movie with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. And I went, yeah.
What's the catch? What's the catch?
Yeah, exactly. What if that's not how it happens? But they had already, you know, have been holding auditions for young Black women to play Danny's wife. And they hadn't found one yet. And they didn't want one of the regular Black ladies that are in most of the movies back then to be in it. And they said I was the right choice.
Yeah.
That was it. Which shocked me, you know. I've never really been in a movie before, but I love Dick Donner. I always say he was my first director. Yeah. And he said, just don't be scared. Don't be afraid. Just I'm not hiring you to be an actor. I went, oh, Lord, I'm in trouble.
They hired you for you. And that was what sold, baby. I mean, that was what was great on the screen, that you had real chemistry. I mean, you felt it was real. It really felt real. Right. Now, was it a culture shock the first time you walked out onto a movie set with spoken lines instead of singing your lines?
It really was. It helped me that Dick Donner was so great when I started working with them. You know, they really influenced me and then helped me. I didn't know anything about acting at the time. And, you know, I tried to figure out ways how you're going to act and how you're going to do this. But I'm glad I didn't, because he didn't really want that. He wanted me to be who I was.
Yeah.
So that really helped a lot. And Danny and Mel helped a lot, too. They would tell me, oh, you know, come on, you've did this before. I said, no, you guys, I'm serious. I have never did this. And plus, I'm scared because of you and you. I'm working right now with two of the biggest stars now in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I've never done this before. But the more relaxed I got, the easier it got.
So who took you under their wing the most? Who was sort of your mentor on stage?
Actually, not Danny or Mel. It was Dick Donner.
Yeah.
He's the one that really helped me get through everything I needed to get through. Nice. Because I did something that I know plenty of actors do this before. When they do a camera thing of each one of the actors that are in it. And, you know, after you do the scene and you get the scene you want, then they do videos just on you.
Mm-hmm.
And other actors are giving you your lines. And I was, this is really weird here. And he was just telling me, he would be, the amazing thing he said right next to me while we were doing this, he says, okay, Danny is looking at you. Okay, don't give him any look. Look down. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like, this is weird, y'all.
There's this weird voice, like a person sitting on my shoulder telling me what to do. It's odd.
And
yeah.
Then, the amazing thing, how come nobody sees him or hears him?
Yeah, right? The magic of Hollywood. It's unbelievable what they do, the smoke and mirrors.
I know. And then I knew we were going to do a second one. I just didn't know we were going to do the third and the fourth one.
Yeah.
So it was really being in the right place at the right time. I don't think I would have ever gotten this job had I been living in Los Angeles, because I didn't go where the movie people went.
How ironic that, yeah.
Most of the time. And in New York, you can be everywhere. On Broadway, you can be in a studio. You can be anywhere, yeah. And somebody can find you. What happened with me.
That's true. And they did find you again, because you've been quite successful on the Broadway stage as well. You starred in shows like Hairspray, Carrie, and Leader of the Pack.
Yes.
Do you like... Okay, so now you've had the Hollywood experience. Now you're going over to Broadway. First of all, there's nothing you can't do, which is incredible. What do you like better out of the two?
Actually, if you want to be an actor, it's fine. But I always wanted to be a singer.
Yeah.
So that was always my goal, to be the best singer I could ever be. And if the acting came, that would come second.
Yeah.
And that would be great. But, you know, it's about the singing and the fulfillment of singing a song that people really enjoys. And you get the joy of it right away. They give you your applause.
Mm-hmm.
Later with the movies, it's a little different. If the movie is a success, you get the applause and everything else. But to get recognition, fortunately, it was really great, because I ended up wooing the press and everything in New York, because they thought I was a figment of Phil Spector's imagination. There was nobody nobody had ever seen me. They had only seen the crystals, and they didn't know about Darlene Love. So it was like, well, there it really is, Darlene Love.
They really exist. Oh, you know, anyone else, I would have said that's really crazy that that could even have been a thing. But you're right. With Phil Spector, yeah, I could see how people would think that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then the girls didn't make it any better. They were upset, and rightly so. Yeah. And I even told them one day, I said, listen, don't get mad at me. I was just doing my job.
No, I know.
Get mad at Phil.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He had a long list.
That was his baby, but it worked out for everybody. The crystals got recognition for it. I got recognition for it, too. So it worked out really good for everybody.
And boy, did you get recognition for it. Because now I want to take another break, but I want to come back and talk about your documentary, everything else that's going on, because now the world's starting to notice you, girl. And you are listening to The Scene with Doreen, and I'm having a wonderful conversation with Grammy Award winning singer, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Darlene Love. When we come back, we're going to talk about Darlene's legacy as the voice of rock and roll and her special bond with the king. Don't miss this. We'll be right back.
A careless driver can change your life in an instant. Do you know what to do or who to call? If you've been injured in a motor vehicle accident and do not have an attorney, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free consultation. We can answer all of your questions and estimate the potential value of your case. Call Auto Accident Help Desk and connect with an expert personal injury attorney.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
Don't worry how to handle your medical bills, lost wages, and pain. We will get you the money you deserve.
They got me way more than the insurance company offered.
The consultation is free, and you do not pay any legal fees unless we win or settle your case. Make the smart call. If you've been injured in an auto accident, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free legal consultation.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
The rock and roll people like Bruce and Elton John and Stevie wanted to know who that girl singer was. My life has been all about trying to make a success of the gift that I had.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I'm here with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Grammy Award-winning singer Darlene Love. Coming out of break, you heard a small excerpt from the Oscar Award-winning documentary 20 Feet from Stardom about Darlene and the lives of other influential background singers of the era. Darlene, you've performed backgrounds for over 200 musical artists throughout your career. You had the Righteous Brothers, Sonny and Cher, the Ronettes, Dionne Warwick, Sam Cooke, and even Frank Sinatra. But I know that you have a very, very special bond with the king, Elvis Presley.
Yes, you know, very interesting. When we did The Blossoms, we did Elvis Presley's 1968 comeback special. And it was, we were just doing the singing part. And then Elvis, when we were in the studio, we got to know one another. Hi, how you doing? Yes, I sing gospel. I came from a gospel background. My church, well, that just really just took him over when he found that out, you know. And I didn't know at the time his favorite music was gospel music. Yes. And the great thing about that was Elvis won 3 Grammys, and they were all 3 for gospel music. That says a lot. It lets you know he really did think a lot about gospel music. He even told me one time he used to go by black churches in the South. And back in those days, we didn't have any kind of air conditioning in our churches, honey. We had to raise the windows up to get some air in the church.
Oh, yeah.
And he said he used to go and just listen at the window of black churches. And he said that's where he got most of his songs from, and how much he really loved the sound of gospel. So that really made us feel good. You know, it was like, wow, this is really true. He really is a person that loves gospel music.
But I heard he really loved you. You had the bond, but he wanted an even greater bond with you, didn't he, Darlene?
Well, you know what? I was a married person at that time.
Uh-huh.
Not only was I married, being involved with Elvis actually scared me.
Sure. I can imagine. I mean, it's Elvis. I can get it.
Somebody said, scared you? I said, yeah, you know, I'm married and this is Elvis Presley. And
those hips gyrating.
This is not got somebody I can just say, hey, let's do it. You know, let's get together. You know, you have to think about this. And he was telling me about all his, you know, he'd never been with a black woman before. And, you know, my grandfather would probably turn over in his grave if he found out I had an interest in a black woman. And then when he said he had never been with a black woman before, I just had nothing else to say to him. I just said, well, I ain't going to be the first.
He probably said, well, hold on a second. I'll be back to you in a week. I'm going to revisit that topic.
And the thing about it, we ended up being really great friends. I think just because of that one situation, you know, because this was like a little secret between me and him that nobody knew anything about, except for the girls. Honey, I ran into them.
Of course you did. You know, once you get something like that out of the way, and it is somebody so big, and he kind of just took it all out. I don't want to say that. It sounds like a terrible euphemism, but it, you know, he took it all out there and laid it all out for you. And there was really nowhere else to go at that point. I mean,
at that time I was like stuck, like, oh, Lordy, what do I do now? We were on a lunch break, so we couldn't do a whole lot at that time. So I almost just wanted to get out of that room.
Oh man. And you know, I give you credit. There are a lot of temptations in the world. And yet I got to give you credit for that one. Cause I don't think there are many people in your shoes that would have thought about any of those things at that time. They would have said, how long do we have?
That's one of those kind of things you don't even want to think about. Let me just get out of here.
Yeah. No, and you know what? Good move on your part, because I really think it was the right thing to do. Even though it was Elvis, it was the right thing for your career.
I think so.
Oh, so
and he would always, you know, come to me and say, what do you think about this song, dog? Do you know this song? You know, so we'd always go around back to the gospel thing. And he was surprised that we knew all of those gospel songs, like Amazing Grace, Precious Lord, Take My Hand, you know, and he would like, I said, you know what? These are the songs we grew up on. Those are the only songs we knew at the time. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea that he knew those songs too, to me, it was just amazing.
Yeah, I would be, you know, you don't look at him and think, wow, that's the stuff he's, you know, that's in him, in his heart and his soul. I mean, that's beautiful.
Exactly.
Now, I do know that a lot of people have special memories. A lot of my guests come on my show and they share their memories of Elvis. But you really had a look that was deeper than most people. Do you have one memory? I know you've shared a lot in your book and in, you know, in the new documentary that's coming out. But is there something that you hold very dear in your heart that's just you can't replace it of Elvis?
Well, I think the relationship that we had, it wasn't a romantic relationship, which most people probably have when they meet something with Elvis and they have time to think about it. So it grows or whatever. But we didn't really have time on the set to really, I mean, he was always surrounded by somebody and the girls were with me. We kind of kept an eye on one another. And I did not want to have a relationship that I would, you know, later on go, man, if I wouldn't have done that, then I wouldn't have had this.
Right.
If I'd have did this, I wouldn't have had that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was thinking about. It wasn't one of those kind of relationships. I could always go and talk to Elvis. He could always talk to me because we didn't have a romantic relationship going. And it turned into a completely singing thing, like with the gospel. And I'll always remember that Elvis, how much he loved gospel music and how much he talked to me about gospel music. Mm-hmm. He wanted to know all about it. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that the times happened when he knew a little more about the gospel music than other guys did.
Yeah.
He actually talked to somebody that knew.
Right. You know, think about it. Anybody can, you know, have a liaison with somebody, especially in your industry. I mean, they were happening all the time. But to have a bond that's musical and emotional and deeper than just a superficial thing, that is what it's about. You know, the other stuff can happen all the time. That's not really, it doesn't really mean anything. But that yours meant something. Yeah.
It kept going on and on and on. Because I remember when Elvis first went back to Vegas. And we were invited to his first opening show. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting right in the front. And I didn't even know this, but I didn't know till someone told me years later that I knew when Elvis was talking about different people being in his audience, he said, I have a world-class singer in the audience. And I'm saying, wow, this is something. I wonder who's out here. He said, and she's been on all of my records. And now about that time, I've only been on one. So I sure didn't think it was me he was talking about. He said, and she's a world-class singer, and I want the audience to meet Darlene Love. Well, I stood there shocked like you could not believe. Mm. You know, and that was like, oh man, this is because of the relationship that we had. That, but wait, he didn't even talk about nobody else being in his audience.
Wow.
And there was plenty stars there that night. And he recognized me. And I went, wow, this is real, this is special.
That is special. Oh, I got goosebumps.
And it's on tape.
Oh, that's tape. Even better.
Yes, that's why a fan sent that to me about 10 years ago.
Oh, nice.
Because I remember it when he did it, but I didn't know it was recorded.
Right.
So I have that.
Oh, you have that forever. And that's his gift to you. He left that
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, you know, I find it fascinating. We talked in the beginning about how many people you've performed, and they all had different personalities. They came from different walks of life, and yet you were able to bond with them through this universal language of music. You found a way that everybody was equal. Everybody was out there, and you were all just there for the common goal of creating art and music. And it's a beautiful thing.
The one thing I always remembered, I was a background singer and they were the star, but they didn't treat me that way. Mm. Like I was just the background singer, the star. So we ended up having a wonderful relationship. I worked for Dionne Warwick for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And even today we have a relationship. Cher was with me when we recorded Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. She was only 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We still have a band because I know when to and when not to. We can be friends and laugh and talk when it's time to work. It's time to work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I always knew that when I was working with them, you know, so we had an unusual relationship with all the people that I worked with, because I work with people like, you know, Jan and Dean of all the people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then the Beach Boys. And then I would work with Sam Cooke. We all had this same kind of common ground,
yes.
which was wonderful. I had no relationships with them, you know, but our relationship was music.
Yes.
And it always was, and it will always be. So I think that's the reason why I enjoy being in this business. So, because I wouldn't let myself go where I didn't want to go, or let it take me where I shouldn't go.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. You know, and it is. It's that universal language. Like I said, it doesn't matter where you come from and what your experiences are. You all speak the same language at that time.
Yes.
It's really
exactly.
beautiful. Well, you're listening to The Scene with Doreen, and I have the distinct honor of chatting with one of Rolling Stone magazine's greatest singers of all time and the rock and roll voice of a generation, the great Darlene Love. Stay right there. We're going to be right back to wrap this all up.
No more mold. No more damage. No more outdated old bathroom. No more slipping and hurting. No more stress. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. Be stress-free. Call 800-827-4067. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. Ask about our military and senior discounts. Your dream bathroom in as little as one day. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Neverclear glass treated door. Call now for free premium color upgrades. 800-827-4067. Call BCI Bath and Shower, the leader in bathroom remodeling. Be smart, safe, and stay a step ahead of inflation with our interest-free financing options. Call 800-827-4067. Love your bathroom with free upgrades. Call 800-827-4067. 800-827-4067.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I've been chatting with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Grammy Award-winning singer Darlene Love. Darlene, Christmas Baby, Please Come Home wasn't just one of your biggest songs. It is the song that is responsible for you even coming back into the music industry. It's a gift.
It really is. You know, I always feel so, so blessed. When I first came to New York, Paul Schaefer was playing Phil Spector at the Bottom Line, and he invited David Letterman down to see the show. And at the show at the Bottom Line, we closed the show with Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. And that night on David Letterman's show, he told Paul, he said, "That's the greatest Christmas song I've ever heard. We need to have her on this show."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was going to be one show. It ended up being 28 shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more than a couple of years.
That's a kind of a more times 12. But yeah, that is, I don't think there's ever been a record that is, you know, unsurpassed. I mean, that is the most.
And I tell David, I say, you don't know it, but you started my career again, because I was doing a few Christmas shows during that time. But the more shows I did with David, it just grew. And I was in New York and people like to make stars and they like to get together and see things like that happen. And year after year after year, my career just took off. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and then that song, it means so much to me because of my faith in what the song is about. People can make that song out of anything. My man coming back home, my mom coming back, my father. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's that time of giving. And that's what that song is all about. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad it was that song that did this. Not He's a Rebel or Do Run Run, none of the, but I'm just saying that song did it for me.
Yeah. And it also has even a meaning. I read that you were cleaning houses at a point where you had left the industry. You're back in California cleaning houses, which is unfathomable. And yet you're cleaning and you hear that song. And that was another reason. It was sort of guiding you all along.
It just took me right back. When I heard that song, I left that job and I just never looked back. Mm. And I always tell people that are trying hard to make it in this business, you can't look back. It's already there. It's gone. Now it's time to look forward. And we're going to have hurdles, but hurdles are not meant to stop you. Mm-hmm. There is something you can get over.
Yes.
So during that time, I just never looked back, even when times looked like they were really, really hard and I just was not going to make it. I was determined. That was a sign for me to be doing what I'm doing, and just never, I never knew it was going to be 60 years later. I thought I'd be stopped by now.
We're glad you weren't, and you aren't. And who says there isn't such a thing as divine intervention?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, people fight it, but you can't fight something like that. There's too many things. And when you pay attention to all of them together, there's something else going on there.
So true. So true. No better word say.
Mm-hmm. Well, fun fact, and out of the break, you heard Cher, you know, singing with you. And, you know, you mentioned it before we went to break that she sang backup on the original recording. And
the
last year, she invited you to sing it with her on her album. And then you performed it together at the Christmas in Rockefeller Center. I mean, full circle moment. Hello.
Complete.
But you guys
are meant to be completed.
Yes. And I don't even think it's done yet. I think it's a little, you probably got more in there somehow, but
I always say I never know. I never know who's going to call me to come and do something.
But it's fun when you leave it open to whatever the plan is, you know, and you don't try to guide it in any way. I honestly believe that's where it makes it fun, because you never know. And the good things happen then. Really good things.
Exactly. It's so true. That's my life.
And, you know, Cher is your friend. I mean, you're not. That's another one. Over the years, you know, that's what, 60-year friendship.
Yeah, she was 17 when I met her, you know, and people are still shocked today that you can still have a relationship with somebody like a Cher.
Yeah.
Oh, I always say, when she called me on the phone, she says, "Hey, doll, this is Cher." And I said, "Who?" And she said, "Cher, bitch."
And that is so Cher.
Okay, this is Cher. This is her. That's just the way she was. And that relationship has never changed.
Oh, I love it. Oh, you've probably seen things that, oh, man, like you've written in your book, your tell-all book, you know, I Am Love. I mean, I keep going back to a lot of these stories, and I'm not even scratching the surface. People have to read your book. I know it came out a few years ago. Are you going to do a second volume? Because I think you're not done
with
stories.
Everybody's talking about it, because I didn't actually get all my goody thing, like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, singing at the Oscars. And, you know, I never have gotten a chance to put that in the book. So, yes, everybody is on me now to please write another book. It's time.
Yes. And we love your stories. Now, you don't just have stories. You have stories. And I mean, I learned some things, because I got to say, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I have to. I'm sorry. I do. But I had a guest on the show about a few months ago. Bill Medley was on the show.
Okay.
And I do have to just bring it up, because he's another one. But he was another one that, you know, liked you a lot.
How was that? You know, we had a 3-year relationship.
Yeah.
And I think we got really close, really, really close. But I think we started thinking about, I had children, he had children. What is this going to do to our career? You know, it's still not that good time where black and white is together and it's going to be just fine. And everybody's just going to have a wonderful time. No, everybody started thinking about their careers, you know, especially the Righteous Brothers, because they were just on their way. Yeah. So nobody knew what would happen if Bill and I got married or whatever, because it was a very close relationship that we had. But nobody really knew about it except for very close friends and and very close industry people. And it wasn't like it is today. You know, they find out about every toenail you clip.
That's true. And then they make some kind of nickname for the two of you. You know, they come up with, you know, they mush your names together. So at least you were not, you were spared from that, at least. Thank
and
you.
And we're still good friends today. So see, I haven't ever burned a bridge. I try not to anyway.
That's good. That's good. And he was cool with you telling the story all these years later in your book?
Oh, yeah. I told him I was going to tell it. I said, it's part of my life.
Oh, no, I love it. I had it in here earlier as my questions. I'm like, should I ask it? Shouldn't I? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to ask. I feel like I'm your friend now. I got to ask you about it.
Now you know some of the stuff.
The real stuff.
It's all in the book.
Yeah. So now if you like that story, get the book because there's a lot more in there. But I got to talk before, you know, because I only have you for a little bit more. But I need, you know, inquiring minds want to know, you've been actively performing for multiple decades. How do you maintain the health of your voice 60 plus years later? You're still kicking it.
I'm still learning. I was having a lot of trouble with my voice last year with having to do the things I did with Cher. And then I talked more than I usually talk. Mm-hmm. During these times when I'm working, I don't talk that much. But we had a lot of catch up to do. So we were talking and laughing and until hours of the night, you know. And then I did a lot of shows, a lot of talking shows. And I had to go to the my throat doctor. I said, I'm having trouble with my throat. And I never have trouble with my throat because I'm always taking care of it. He said, let me send you to a throat therapist. A throat therapist is somebody that take care of people, not who have lost their voice, but lost their vocal cords, trying to get them back. And what she did, she gave me, had me to buy what they call a singing straw.
Really?
Blow into it. If you can't find, the normal way to do it is with water in a straw and blowing in it, learning how to sing in this thing with bubbles and water. And I have not stop praising this woman since she gave me these things, because the hardest thing in the world, you don't have time to figure out how to warm your vocal cords up when you sing the national anthem.
And you're usually doing it outside, and you're usually doing it in sub-zero temperatures, and it's not healthy.
Exactly. So she told me how to do it with the straw. She said, you will be able to sing the way you sing the rest of your life if you start just doing this technique. And the one thing I always listen to my husband, because he knows how to judge me. He knows what I'm doing wrong and what I'm not. And he said, doll, I've never heard you sing the national anthem this clear before.
Wow.
I said, well, I've been sitting up here sucking on this straw.
Well, what a great, I had no idea.
I found out that like singers that, you know, opera singers use this.
Yeah.
And she actually told me, you know, I'm serious when I tell you, I'm not trying to change the way you sing or anything. I'm just trying to tell you, you can sing like this for the rest of your life if you want to. And I went like, well, it looks like that's what I'm doing, because I'm 83 now and I'm still working hard.
And you sound amazing. And you're doing a new tour. You're going to head out end of November. You're doing your national holiday tour. So you definitely are, you know, ramping things up right now. So you better be, girl.
Yeah. And Philadelphia is starting it, because I'm doing the Thanksgiving parade. That's when I started my Christmas tour. So it's just right around the corner.
You have a special, I've heard that you like Philly a lot. You have a special connection to Philly.
Well, you know what? It's a gentleman there. He's no longer with us. And I know you who he is. His name is the Geeter.
Oh, yes. He passed, unfortunately, last year.
He was the first disc jockey that played my records. Because back in the 50s and the 60s, the early days of music, a white disc jockey did not play a black record. They didn't keep them together. They was as far as the east is from the west. And the Geeter always played black records.
Yes, he did.
So when I came to Philadelphia back in the 60s, he was one of the first disc jockeys I met. And we stayed friends up until he died. So I mean, you know, I can really claim to say I've known people most of my career life. And it's not like I went to his house. He came to my house. We were on the phone all the time, but we had such a wonderful relationship. That's why I think I really do have a wonderful relationship with Philadelphia, knowing he broke my record.
Yes.
You know, and it was one of the first disc jockeys to start playing Black music. Mm. And, you know, I give him all the credit for doing that. He was just an unusual guy.
Oh, he was.
I never met anybody like that.
He was. We had dinner once years ago, probably about 15 years ago when I first moved to the area. And yeah, he was unusual. That was like my first experience. I was with Joe Frazier, Smoking Joe Frazier, and he was there.
He introduced me to him.
See, there you go. We were in the same circle and we didn't know it.
Right.
I was so glad you told that story because I had no idea that that was your connection to Philly. Oh, see, we were one step away.
And you know, I think about it, and I came there after that and did the Dick Clark Show.
Yes.
Before the Dick Clark Show moved from Philadelphia mm-hmm. to California. So my career really kind of started in the East.
Yeah.
We don't think about it that way, but it really did. The disc jockey and then Dick Clark. And then the bundle of my career happened once I moved to New York City, which is, hey, listen, now I'm a Easterner.
Yes, you are. You've embraced it wholeheartedly. You've come to be one of us. You're now one of us.
Yes.
Well, welcome. We love you here because you are our adopted daughter. It's great.
Thank you so much. I owe Philadelphia a whole lot. And I don't one moment think that that was what was supposed to be, because I do believe it was supposed to be. I don't think it. I knew it was.
Yes. You have a great message of hope and optimism. And I know the early rock and roll songs, they did too. They really did. There was a different kind of message. And in today's music, I don't hear it as much. Do you ever think we're going to get back there?
We all have this conversation. We don't know what they're going to be doing in 10 years.
Yeah.
60.
Yeah. That's true. But I wish we could go back a little. I think we need it, especially
it
what's going
nice.
On. Yeah, we need a little bit.
That's going to happen with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that they're going to go back and get a few more of those that they missed.
They've
know?
Missed a few. I've had a few of my guests on that I'm always amazed. I said, I got to start a petition each time I have a guest on the show to get them in, because it's amazing how many they've neglected over the years.
You're right, and they're starting to bring in now the people that was out in the 90s. And
yeah,
now the
I know.
They haven't done the ones in this 50s and 60s yet.
I know. Well, you know, you got to go have a talk with them. I think you got to whip them
right.
into shape.
Believe me, we are on it.
Good. All right. If anyone's going to do it, it's Darlene Love is going to do it.
Hello.
Well, before I let you go, I got one last question for you.
Uh-huh.
And you are the Christmas queen. I don't care what anybody says. And I know that even Mariah has laid down props to you as the official Christmas queen.
Yes.
What's the best Christmas gift you've ever gotten?
Interesting. The best. I really don't know. I think the love that I have for Jesus Christ and what it all means to me, especially my faith. My whole career has been a faith walk.
Mm.
And for this song to become what it came, you know, even after Mariah Carey's song was so big, and she just just a few years ago, recorded her Christmas song, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
My song is right up there with hers.
Yes, it is.
And one of the best gifts I got was Bruce Springsteen last year gave me a platinum album of Christmas Baby Please Come Home as a Grammy million seller.
Mm.
And don't get better than that.
No, and you couldn't tell anybody. I've heard that story where you were not allowed. You guys had it. It was going to all, he was going to present it to you, but that had to be the best kept secret in the world. You couldn't tell anybody that he was going to be there.
No, and I couldn't. And they were like, wait a minute, you can't tell anybody Bruce is coming. I went, what? They said, because you wouldn't even be able to get in the building.
It would be your record, but you wouldn't be there.
Exactly. So it's so many wonderful things, Doreen, that has happened to me over the years. I can never forget what I feel that the Lord has really done for me. My faith in God has been my strength in everything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us have did a faith walk, but I think my faith walk can beat all of them.
You are totally inspiring. And everybody should get your book, My Name is Love. Check out the new Netflix documentary, Return of the King, The Rise and Fall of Elvis Presley, which features you. And see Darlene on her nationwide holiday tour starting at the end of November. And visit DarleneLoveWorld.com for everything else. I'm winded. I need to do the straw technique just to get through all the things you're doing, because I loved this time with you. It went by so fast, and you really, you've inspired me.
Thank you so very much. I'm just here for everybody. You know what I'm saying? This is a gift to me too, to be able to be this part of Christmas, where it's a giving spirit for everybody. Yes. During this time of the year.
Yes.
And one day, maybe all year long.
You know, I think you are. Look at you. You are the voice of the rock and roll era. I mean, you really are. When you hear your voice, you are the voice. New York Times said it best. You are as ingrained in there as any other thing, and you give it every day of the year. You are the Christmas gift that keeps on giving.
Thank you so much. It was a joy talking to you.
Oh, you too. And I thank you for everything. You're amazing. Have a wonderful day, and Merry Christmas.
Oh, thank you for that early one.
Yes, I'm going to be your first.
Okay. God bless you.
You too. Thank you, my dear.
All righty.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you to my guest today, the incredible Darlene Love. And thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each and every week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And make sure to tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye!